Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune of Coram Deo Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church and our special guest, Hannah, who you met last week on last week's episode. On Wednesdays, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about the untold story of prenatal testing. This is part two.
Yeah, go back to listen to last week's if you didn't. Hannah, thanks for staying with us for another episode. You didn't really go anywhere. We just hit record again. So we want to dive back in to your journey with this. And I want to start by reading a pretty sad story from the BBC. And I've got five or six articles that we resourced for this topic in this conversation. But I just want to read a couple of paragraphs from this BBC article because of what I think it reinforces is the huge risk, broadly speaking, with prenatal genetic testing. This article is dated February 2025. It's from the BBC. There's a massive investigation going on in the UK right now, and here's why. The intro to the article says, two couples have told the BBC they went through with abortions after an NHS trust mistakenly told them their unborn babies had serious genetic conditions. The couple here obviously is not Christians. They're not even married. It's a partner situation, a woman and a man who got pregnant, says they were expecting their first child when a blood screening test indicated their baby had a high chance of having a chromosomal abnormality. 2 days later, the fetal team told them the results indicated their daughter had a rare genetic condition, which often results in miscarriage, stillbirth, or the baby dying shortly after birth. They had a conversation shortly afterwards with a fetal care consultant. They say they were told their baby would be left with severe care needs and it might not survive the pregnancy. Results from a more detailed analysis of the sample were due back 2 weeks later. The couple asked if it might show a different outcome, but they say their consultant told them it would not. Based on that advice that their daughter had a fatal fetal abnormality, the couple decided to have an abortion. 6 weeks after the abortion, they were asked to attend a meeting at City Hospital, which they assumed was a routine follow-up. The consultant just walked in, and the first thing she said was, "I've got something to tell you. Your results have changed." The second test, called a long-term CVS culture, showed their daughter had no chromosomal abnormality. The first test result, which was the basis on which they decided to terminate the pregnancy, had been a false positive. And the investigation in the UK says this is a well-recognized hazard of early CVS results. So this is an example of a couple making the decision that you're saying that you're fearful that a lot of people would make, Hannah, that if you receive apparently medical verifiable information that your child might not live or that there's a serious problem and you're not coming from a Christian worldview, you can see how people can make really, really sad decisions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the medical professionals that we met with, again, didn't flat out suggest that, but they said things that left it open as an option.
Well, and what's interesting is you're not the only person in our church who has that story. I have another email sitting right here in front of me from another person who did not have even NIPT testing. It was the more basic form of testing. But she says, 17 weeks into my pregnancy, we were told that something was not right with our baby. And we were told, not so subtly, that we should consider abortion. And she says she switched doctors. And the story ends up being their baby was born. Nothing was wrong. She's totally fine. But there's another story here of someone basically saying, yeah, they didn't tell me to terminate the pregnancy, but they kind of not so subtly hinted that that might be the decision that I might want to make based on this test. What do you think that, sorry, I don't want to keep putting the focus on you, Hannah. Hannah, what do you think as you sort of give advice to couples who are going to continue hearing these kinds of things, right? So anybody who does this testing, there's a chance they're going to hear, hey, this test showed a concern. What do you advise a couple to do? You've walked through it personally. You know the existential sort of sadness of it, but also the uncertainty of like, well, then you go to the ultrasound and it sounds like things are fine. So how, what can you say to couples to walk through sort of the strangeness of living in that, that middle ground between maybe there's something significant here, or maybe there isn't?
To start, I think it's important that the couple prays and thinks deeply about the test to begin with, and that they are fully informed on the possibilities and likelihoods of a false positive, and think about what they would do in that situation.
Yeah, that's
so
good.
So before they even get there, I think they should consider it as, consider what they would do if that were to happen. And then that middle ground is tough. It's really tough. Like I said, it felt like whiplash. Good news, bad news, good news, bad news. So we had a really good appointment, good ultrasound. And then we came for our next growth ultrasound and she was really small. And so then they told us, well, small babies is another sign of Turner syndrome, but also small babies could just be small babies. So then that appointment didn't go well. And again, they treated us as if our baby for sure had this genetic disorder. And so every single appointment was just shadowed with like sadness and almost like grief. And so I think couples should be aware before they even get the test that it really could alter their pregnancy experience. But yeah, sitting in that middle ground as Christians, we bring it to the Lord. We bring our fears to the Lord. We bring our joys. We bring our sadness. And then for us, surrounding ourselves with community was really helpful. So brothers and sisters who aren't as emotional, of course, about the situation as we are, can speak life into us, can speak truth into us, can remind us of the truths about the character of God, so that we take our eyes off ourselves and lift them to Him. And that's what I would encourage couples to do if they are in this situation, is to always keep their eyes on the character of God, because that's where we can find comfort, not in our circumstances, not in whether our baby has a genetic disorder or is otherwise healthy, but that we serve a God who is loving and kind and merciful and just, and He knows all the days of our lives, all the days of our baby's lives, and He loves them so much, and His will is better than our will. And so surrounding yourself with people who remind you of those truths and just devouring the Word so we can better know the God that we serve is, I think, the best way to really fight against that fear and fight against the temptation to try to control every situation.
Bethany, you faced the decision of whether to have an NIPT test like very recently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tell us about it.
I mean, so I have my first daughter and that was back in 2023. And I remember the doctor bringing it up kind of like, because it was our first pregnancy and my husband has a brother who is special needs. And so I think she just kind of brought it up as like a, hey, we don't necessarily know if his condition is genetic. It could be valuable, but she's like, it could also just cause a lot of worry. So you guys shouldn't feel any pressure to do it, which I'm super thankful for. And we talked about it. And honestly, we were kind of like you, Hannah, like I was like, I more just want to find out the gender. And I think that's what draws a lot of couples to it, because you can find out the gender at like 12 weeks and that is just really exciting. And, yeah. And then more recently, cause I'm pregnant with my second, they brought it up again, but still there wasn't a whole lot of pressure again, but I see a doctor who is in the Catholic healthcare system. So I just feel like they're probably not going to push it as much. Yeah. And I mean, we could have still gone through with it. But that obviously they're probably not going to counsel you to terminate the pregnancy, which I was always really thankful for. But yeah, it's kind of like, it's kind of shocking how it seems like such a lighthearted thing. Mm-hmm. Like it's more like find out the gender of your baby. And also it could be just devastating. Yes. And I think that that's the thing that like, I would just want listeners like, wait until the anatomy scan. You can do it. So many people have done it. You'll be fine. It's not going to change it. Like it's probably not going to change anything. Knowing the gender like that early on. Yeah.
Chris, have you had to walk through this with couples in your church?
Not this specific thing. There's been a couple of situations where it was like a known, like, hey, this genetic defect is confirmed. It's known. It wasn't the same kind of space. But it is, I think just the heaviness of that and the questions that just arises to be grounded in good community, biblical truth, God's faithfulness, prayer, to sustain you even when these things are true. And so as a Christian community, there is the reality of, hey, this is a thing that has some significant, and I, as I'm, you know, pondering this conversation, there's this part of me that just wants to like go nuclear on like the culture war side of this, because there is something devious going on right in this. And so, but taking a step back from that, why this is such a potent thing is because this does happen, you know, that there are families that do face the pain of a child with genetic defects and the effect that that has on their lives. And just what does it look like for a Christian community to be able to sustain and love people, because the temptation is going to be so great. I mean, you have a medical community that's no longer subtly implying that you should do it, but outright suggesting it. And so abortion hasn't just become, hey, this thing that you kind of make in your, you know, sort of private decision that you're going to do. You go consult, you go to a special place to consult. It's like your primary care is now suggesting if your kid has, you know, some sort of abnormality. So just even the pressure that we're facing as a culture that's going to try to get inside and underneath the pain and the uncertainty that you're feeling. And so there's, I just think that as far as the church being surrounding people with biblical truth, but just the love, the support, the prayer that is going to sustain people.
Chris, you're bringing up an important point that you also made, Hannah, which is that, yeah, that actually for Christians, the outcome of these tests, whether they're positive or negative, doesn't change the fact that we hold all life to be sacred. So we want to help people. The goal of this podcast is to point out there's a lot of false positives. But even if these tests are positive and you have a child that has some condition, great. We want to be in a community that loves that child, welcomes that child, and values that child. So in a sense, the outcomes of these tests for Christians don't change our fundamental posture toward the child. But I do have a concern that it's important that we also know the prevalence of false positives, because I think it just changes the way we should, like you said, Hannah, walk in knowing that that's a possibility and understanding that, like, hey, these tests actually aren't very reliable. And so we ought to hold very open-handedly what doctors are telling us, what we're going to do as far as follow-up screening and so forth. I just think it helps us to have the knowledge that that's the case.
And that reminded me, I did not know this until I was looking through the articles for this episode, that these are screenings. They are not diagnostic. So it's not telling you that your baby's going to have this. And also that a lot of these tests, like, they are not regulated by the FDA. So it's just people making money.
And that's the thing. It goes back to like, why, if something is this unreliable and it's going to throw people into such confusion, it's going to result in people aborting children that they wouldn't normally. Why is it? And the money thing, it's just so blatantly like, what is going on? Why is this not like people screaming at, because we're always hearing about the crooked medical, you know, the healthcare system and all this. And it's like, this seems to be pretty blatant.
Yeah. There are a lot of Silicon Valley startups making a lot of money off of genetic testing. I want to turn quickly to some doctor perspective. And I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on this, Hannah, too, as you hear a doctor talk about it. So there's a doctor in Coram Deo who I sent these articles to, and he said, hey, I'd like to give you my perspective. His email says this: let's start by discussing where we started with prenatal testing and what it has morphed into. It used to come in just two varieties, the first trimester screen and the second trimester screen. These were developed and used as screening tests to gauge if a woman was at increased or decreased risk for very specific genetic abnormalities, trisomy 13, 18, 21, and potential neural tube developmental issues like spina bifida. These aren't diagnostic tests, so they don't confirm a diagnosis. To diagnose these in utero, we have to do more invasive testing that the articles mention, namely an amniocentesis or CVS. The results may take a while to fully interpret, and you can have early false results. Ultimately, he writes, this led to the development of the newer NIPT, which stands for non-invasive prenatal tests, that are the main subject of this article. These were designed to replace the older tests and actually were really good at the original intent, looking at a few very specific things. They allow testing of just the mother's blood, which you mentioned, Hannah, no risk to the baby. And so you can do it earlier than previous tests and a lot less invasively. These newer tests really expanded access to early screening. And so actually some of them are better than the previous tests. The problem is that they are beginning to be used to screen for other things that they weren't originally intended for. So he acknowledges that these tests had one very specific purpose, and now companies are broadening them and using them for a bunch of things that they actually weren't intended for and don't do very well. He writes, when looking at the usefulness of tests, we have to look at sensitivity, specificity, and prevalence. All of you medical people are like, yep, we know what all those words mean. I'm just going to keep reading. He said, so there's three components, sensitivity, specificity, and prevalence. The formula for PPV, he lists out here, and then says, a nearly perfect test with sensitivity and specificity of 99%, which doesn't exist. But if you had a perfect test, he says it would yield a positive predictive value of 0.5% with the rarest of the conditions listed in this article. Using the tests for this is just bad. So he's saying the best possible test you could have for the rarest condition they mentioned in this article, you would get a 0.5% predictive value. Like, it just wouldn't be helpful at all. So he says the way these newer tests are being used and not regulated is a problem. And with the direct-to-consumer marketing that happens, we wind up with tons of these tests that are done or interpreted poorly and with serious and bad actions taken by both doctors and patients based on that. So he's acknowledging the way these tests are used are a problem, the fact that they're not regulated is a problem, and it's interesting he mentions direct-to-consumer marketing because you actually probably have Instagram that's telling you, hey, you can go get this test. I mean, you know, these companies are smart. They're telling you, hey, you should go ask your doctor for this test. So sometimes it could be the people who are asking for these tests. He writes, there are a couple of reasons that we might pursue this testing that I think are reasonable and in line with Christian values and ethics. The first is just knowledge for the parent. If taking care of your new baby is going to require a lot more than you originally anticipated because they do have a condition, having some time to process that and do appropriate research, I think is valuable. The second reason, he says, is that it can change other recommendations or screenings for both mom and baby. And so if one of these tests turns up something that a doctor thinks is concerning, he might want to recommend or she might want to recommend additional testing or some kind of more proactive approach. In fact, he even mentions, you know, if one of these tests shows that a pregnancy is high risk and it's in a rural community, I might want to, you know, I'm going to be more attentive to that as a doctor and want to make sure that I don't have to, you know, fly a
life
mom,
flight a baby.
Yeah, life flight a baby or a mother, you know. So he's saying there might be a couple situations where these kinds of tests could be helpful and where I, as a Christian doctor, would want a mom to do them. Do you have thoughts, either of you?
Yeah, I agree with him if the test is right. But both of those thoughts are assuming that the baby actually does have that disorder. So it's still tough because, yes, it might be nice for some parents to have additional time to prepare for a baby who might have a genetic disorder. And yes, it might be beneficial for medical professionals to provide more specialized care for a baby that has a genetic disorder. Absolutely. But that's only if the baby actually has the genetic disorder. And if the tests are false, then neither of those really apply.
I think this is where maybe I would say, like, wait until the anatomy scan. That's like the big scan where they spend a lot of time taking all sorts of measurements. And usually at those scans, if something's wrong, it would turn up. Like yeah. for your case, Anna, like even if you hadn't have done the testing, if she did have Turner syndrome, it probably would have shown up there. And that would have like tipped you guys off to something being wrong. So I think like even just waiting until that point and then going from there would be wise.
He goes on to write, I want to share my approach when I counsel patients. I talk through these are screening tests. They aren't diagnostic. And that most of the time I wouldn't recommend the more invasive testing regardless of the result. We can use this to help gauge some of their other risks and optimize things to the best of our ability. A large number of my patients don't elect to have these tests done after we talk through things. So he's saying, yep, I just tell them this is not diagnostic. It's just a screen. And it sounds like you're saying that would have been nice to know instead mm-hmm. of saying this is a 70% accurate test.
Yeah. And I think they probably did say that. They probably did say this is a screen. This is just a screener. But when you hear that news as a parent, yeah. it doesn't really change how you feel, whether or not they say it's a diagnosis or not, because as a non-medical professional, it just doesn't really change how you receive that news as a parent.
Yeah. And it sounds as if they also were, all the information they were giving you was through that lens too. Right. And so you're led to believe this is likely,
right.
even if it's just a screen, but we're operating almost if this is a likelihood.
Yeah. So, like it is diagnostic.
Yeah. Yeah.
One final thought here, and this is from a Christian doctor. And I think this is very interesting. He writes, essentially none of the governing boards that certify physicians in their specialty are pro-life. I would wager a fair amount that there isn't a single governing entity that would qualify as pro-life. This doesn't mean there aren't great OBGYNs who love Jesus and are going to champion life, but it does mean that as Christians, engaging this specialty in these times, there's a good chance they're not going to get advice from someone who shares our view of the sanctity of life. As I'm thinking through some of these articles, it probably isn't possible as Christians for all of our doctors and healthcare providers to share our worldview, but maybe that is something we should consider more in the people that we allow to care for us, particularly in really vulnerable times, which I think is really interesting to your point about having a convictionally Catholic doctor who's just going to say like, well, we're not going to be counseling you to get an abortion. Right.
Yeah.
And so I think it is interesting there to think about how much our ethical worldview matters in a situation like this, in a moment where your doctor is going to be telling you, you're going to be asking Hannah, what do I do with this diagnosis? And a doctor is going to be either advising you or suggesting to you, here's what you might want to think about. It matters a lot in these kinds of moments, sometimes to have a doctor that shares a Christian worldview.
Yeah. I read that from that email, Bob, and I was kind of like, maybe this is just how cynical I am now. I was like, I'm not surprised at all. And quite frankly, I think I wouldn't be surprised if I was going to like a provider and they, you know, tried to offer that as an option. I'm like, yeah, that's probably a thing. But I think it's like, and Hannah, I really admire how you and your husband were like from the get-go, like very firm and just like, no, we're not gonna, that's not an option for us. And I think that that's like maybe the call for like Christian couples who, are doing this. Yeah. Your provider might offer that as an option and that's really disappointing, but it's also a good moment to just be firm in your convictions and to show them that that's just not something you're even going to think about.
Yeah. So after the dust settled a little bit, and after a lot of prayer, we said, you know what, let's use this as a ministry opportunity. So we're in this space where, there was no indication that our medical staff were Christians. And we said, this is an opportunity for us to show them the love of Christ. And so we brought up our faith in the appointments. We talked about how we prayed and how that how our baby is a blessing from God. And so we tried to use this as an opportunity to share the gospel with people who otherwise may never hear it because they're in a space where there are no other believers.
Yeah. I want to second what Bethany said. I'm really impressed with your conviction and your level of clarity. And what I want people to hear who are listening to this podcast, kind of what you just said, Bethany, is like, we've got to take the lead in these conversations. There might have been a day in, you know, I mean, my father grew up in a small town of 600 people and there was one doctor in the town. It was just like, you know, everybody knew everybody. And so you just knew family's convictions. And there was a much more of an ethic of life and sacredness and all of that. It's a small town America. Those days are not the days we live in. And so if, as a couple walking in with Christian convictions, you're going to have to be the one telling your doctor, here's what is and isn't an option for us. And no matter what you tell us, here's where we're going to stand on how we are going to approach this child. And the days of sort of being in a posture where it's like asking my doctor and letting them tell me what I'm going to do, if those days ever existed, that's not the moment we live in. So I think we as Christians have to be proactive and the one sort of setting the ethical conversation. And I really admire you guys for doing that, Hannah. And I think for medical professionals listening to this, a lot of doctors and nurses and med students, similarly, as you hear this Christian doctor talk about, all right, I do have to offer these tests because they exist. But what I would say as a doctor to a family is, hey, you might not need to do these. And, you know, so thinking through how do you practice medicine in a way that has integrity and in a way that's going to give the best possible opportunity to a couple to not weigh this decision more heavily than they ought. And it's going to give a baby, whether this is a couple who you know their worldview or not, how are you going to do the best you can as a medical provider to give this baby a chance at life rather than passing along news that someone might make a terrible decision about because they're not coming from a Christian worldview. So my concern in this whole topic is sort of just to raise the issue, to put it on the radar for people and to help us see this is a pretty significant ethical and moral concern that we're going to need to be aware of. And that if you are in this world, either because you're having children or because you're practicing medicine, these are pretty, pretty important conversations. Any final just thoughts around the table, especially Hannah, anything you'd want to say that you haven't said yet?
I would just encourage couples to be very prayerful before they even are potentially thinking of having children. And like you said, to just take the initiative on all things fertility related, pregnancy related, labor, delivery, postpartum, to do research and to take the initiative and to spend time talking with believers who are farther along in life than them, or sisters in Christ who have walked this journey recently. And so I guess my encouragement is to be prepared, to prepare yourself, to arm yourself, to seek the Lord for wisdom in every single step of your pregnancy journey. Because if you're passive, like you said, then you might get swooped into things that you don't necessarily want to be a part of, but they're just the norm now. And so being proactive, prayerful, and seeking the Lord's wisdom for every decision is my biggest encouragement to couples in this life stage.
The only thing I would want to add before we close, and Chris has kind of already hinted this, is that you should always be skeptical of capitalism. Where there's money to be made, people are going to try to make that money. And we're dealing with an area here where technology has opened up the possibility for people to sell you a bunch of tests. And yet these tests are not regulated by the FDA. They're highly unreliable. And what they essentially do is make money for companies. And so there's a healthy skepticism that Christians should have about just how the money flows in our society. And that should just help us have the sort of biblical wisdom to go, okay, there's a profit motive here, and that should filter into how I hear this information, how I make these decisions, what I think is important and less important. It's just helpful for us to be a little bit skeptical of who's the person that gets paid if I make this decision, and what does that suggest? And again, that's not to cast any aspersions on the medical field as a whole. I know that the doctors and nurses who work in this area are really good people. It's more that there's a behind that stands a whole, you know, pharmaceutical industry and medical technology and all of that. And that all is shaping a lot of what we're experiencing right now and what we're being sold and what's being talked about. And so we need to be clear-eyed about the fact that not all of those things are honoring to the Lord. Not all of them are good for us. Not all of them are reliable. And that the more skepticism we have in some of these places, the better it is for our sanity, for our convictions, and for our ability to sort of live with peace and wisdom in the world.
Another thing that Marcus and I thought about during this process that kind of became a motto for us was, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Jurassic Park again, right, yes. Bethany?
It always comes back to Jurassic Park.
Seriously. Yeah, I know you guys previously talked about this exact concept, and especially with pregnancy and fertility, all the things. That's just another thing that I think couples should think about.
It's really good. Hannah, we're so honored that you would take the time to come on here and tell your story. And I know you walked through a really hard season in what you described of just the uncertainty of that. So thank you for trusting the Lord, having faith. And thanks for being willing to share your story. I think it's really going to be helpful to listeners to just know what this journey is like from the inside. And so it means a lot to me that you'd be willing to come on here and talk about it.
Yeah, happy to share and happy to talk with anyone if they want to learn more.
Yeah. So if you have a specific question in this area that you feel like maybe Hannah's story could relate to, just send an email to podcast@cvomaha.com and we can send it on to her and put you in touch with her. So I don't think she wants to start a business coaching women through pregnancy. But if there's a reason why you feel like there'd be a specific thing here that she might be able to speak to, then I know she'd love to be helpful in that way.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We love to hear from listeners, so if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.